by revealing and disclosing our lack of faith and practice. Before the Buddha, we melt away the root of transgressions by the power of this repentance. And this is the pure and simple color of true practice and true mind of faith. So again, as the days of Sesshin go on, to acknowledge a vow before the Buddhas to ourselves and to another if we wish, our lack of faith and practice. That's what we're actually repenting. We could say any of our stuck habits and so on are actually this, are actually our lack of faith and practice. Or lack of faith in practice. One habit that I'm studying and looking at these two sides that we were discussing the other day of just completely letting it be and then bringing forth some energy to work with it, shift it, transform it, is I have this ancient, long-standing habit of being late. Some of you might have noticed sometimes. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes I feel really not so good about it, and sometimes I just feel like, well, this has been going on for, you know, so many years that it's just, and you know, at Tassajara, I just got a reputation for, well, of course, Kokyo's not here yet, he'll, you know, he's always going to be at least like 5 minutes or 10 late, so we're not even expecting him to be on time. It sort of like became part of my reputation, which I didn't feel so good about. But in a way, you know, people weren't so hard on me about it, so I didn't feel so bad either. But looking at it, it's not so much the being late that's the problem. I mean, sometimes if somebody's relying on me and I'm late, then it can actually, somebody can be really upset, and that's when I actually feel the worst. But when nobody really cares that much, it doesn't seem so bad, and yet, in a way, I feel like it is my lack of faith in practice that causes this. And if my faith in the way things are was really complete, I wouldn't need to do that last little thing that makes me late, because that's what it's about. It's like, it's kind of like greed, actually. It's wanting to do one more little thing. Finish this sentence often. As an avid reader, oh, this is just getting good. But okay, no, it's okay, just one more, just the paragraph. And start to get up and like, go back even sometimes. For one more hit of Dharma. There's something, you know. And it's like, yeah, I don't, you know, usually think of it that way, but I feel like it's kind of a lack of faith, of like, I don't need another sentence right now. The, you know, Zen is a formless, timeless realm, and it's also the realm of exact timing and schedules and bells ringing at particular times. And I think that's quite intentional, the setup, that we have this, we're opening to this formless, timeless mind, ordinary mind, and yet, so that we don't get stuck in a one-sided view of that, we have all these forms and schedules to see if we can manifest this relaxed, present, non-doing, ordinary mind in the midst of all these details. So anyway, that's one thing, maybe kind of small thing, maybe kind of big thing, that I'm revealing and disclosing before the Buddha and looking at and trying to work with in both these sides. And as I said the other day, particularly the really complete acceptance side. Conventionally speaking, this person who's virtually always late. Like, that's just how it is, and I accept that completely. And now let's look at particularly where it's coming from. This craving, actually, right? This wish for like a little more of whatever I'm doing. Even if I can come back to it. Almost always it's something I can come back to later. And yet, that harmonizing with the flow of time, I think, is a wonderful practice, and particularly in Sesshin. So, Matsu, our great ancient ancestor, Matsu, said, ordinary mind is the way. And he said it like this: the way needs no cultivation, just do not defile. What is defilement? When with the mind of birth and death, one acts in a contrived way, then everything is defilement. Contrived seems to mean, adding something extra to what's naturally happening. If one wants to know the way directly, ordinary mind is the way. This may have been said before Matsu in the world, but we have no records of it being said before. So this ancestor particularly coined this phrase, and it became known as the heart of Zen teaching through Matsu. Ordinary mind is the way. And the other phrase, this mind is Buddha, also attributed to Matsu. Two wonderful, all-encompassing, very simple, very direct, and very challenging teachings of this ancestor. Ordinary mind is the way, and what is meant by ordinary mind? How kind of him to explain and define. And as I mentioned the other day, this it's not often what we think. We love to hear ordinary mind is the way, ordinary, the greedy mind for reading one more sentence. That's just ordinary, and that's the way. But here, ordinary mind is no activity, no right or wrong, no grasping or rejecting, neither terminable nor permanent, without worldly or holy. Just like now, whether walking, standing, sitting, or reclining, responding to situations and dealing with people as they come, everything is the way. So it's no right or wrong. So to feel like, well, I can't believe I did it again. I had to read that one last sentence and I was late again. And is that wrong? Then that makes it, that contrives it. And yet, even before I say it's right or wrong, there's already this kind of grasping or rejecting mind. Ordinary mind could be that in that situation, the habitual tendency kicks in, and come on, just like this one more sentence, and then kind of catching that and saying, oh, okay, I can let that go, and just go. The grasping and rejecting mind dropping away for a moment. And then not making that right either. Then to say, oh, cool, I finally did it. And totally, that's, oh wow, I'm totally on time. How great. No, that's, then it contrives it again. Which is a little bit like Bijan was saying about just the reflecting mirror mind and then not abiding in that and not making non-abiding into something either. So Matsu had these many, many great students, and Zen totally flourished in that next generation after Matsu and during Matsu's time. And so his maybe most well-known disciple is Bijan, Yakujo, or Bijan. And so we heard some stories of Bijan's present mirror awareness mind. And another student of Matsu, just like, there's so many, they just like pop up all over the place. This is this morning in the Genjo Koan, one just popped up there, just coincidentally. Zen Master Baoche of Mount Mayu, who was fanning himself. This is also a disciple of Matsu. And a great story in itself, right, about Sesshin practice, that if the way is ordinary and all-pervading, why do we need to do this work of Zazen, this fanning work? And monk asks, what's the meaning of this wind reaching everywhere? It just keeps fanning. Just fanning. There's no, we're not going to explain more than this, but just Zazen, continuing Zazen. Yeah, circulates the wind of the Buddha's house. So we have Mayu of Baoche Mayu, and then we have Bijang, and then we have Nanchuan. Nanchuan's maybe the other really great disciple of Matsu. He's the one who killed a cat. You might know that story. Maybe we won't get into that today, but a lot of these disciples of Matsu had a lot of animal interactions with foxes, wild geese, and cats. But Nanchuan was also the teacher of Jiaozhou, and that lineage did not continue much past Jiaozhou, but it did continue through Bijan to Huangbo and Linji. And I hope to continue down that stream of these amazing ancestors of Huangbo and Linji. But for now, Nanchuan, because Nanchuan took Matsu's teaching of ordinary mind is the way, and awakened his student Jiaozhou with this saying. These sayings can be used again and again, freshly, even though they were from ancient times. So, Nanchuan and Jiaozhou. Jiaozhou is this, and he's the one, for just to put this in context more, that these are all such, amongst the Chinese Zen ancestors, this kind of time period is the most kind of thriving, and most Zen stories coming out of this time. So Jiaozhou is maybe most known for his Koan Mu, does a dog have Buddha nature? And he said, no, or Mu. classic story. But this was in the very early days of practice of Zhao Zhou, and I think he was a teenager, and he came to Nanchuan to practice. And I think in general, Zhao Zhou was this amazing character because he had this dialogue and this awakening when he was in his 20s or something. And then he stayed with Nanchuan until he died, I think, and Zhao Zhou was maybe 80 at that time. And then, maybe he was 60. I can't remember exactly, but he was quite old compared to when he started. So he'd been practicing 40 years or something. And then, when his teacher died, he felt like he didn't have that commitment anymore. So then he went on pilgrimage, visited other teachers all around China for the next 20 years to keep studying, keep learning, until he was 80. And then finally when he was 80, he's like, okay, now maybe I'll, stop and offer something to people. I'll teach some now. I've been practicing enough from when I was a teenager till I'm 80. And so then he taught Dharma for another 40 years till he was 120, as the story goes, which is unusual. and so inspiring, I think, that he, and that when he set out on his pilgrimage when he was 60, he said something like, if there's, and maybe kind of acknowledging that he was kind of older to be doing this kind of pilgrimage, to visit teachers and learn Zen. But he said, even if I meet a six-year-old child who has something to teach me, I will be their student. And if there's a 100-year-old man who needs my teaching, I will be their teacher. So kind of making this point about I can play either role. We're just enacting Dharma here. That was his spirit of pilgrimage. And apparently very, very few, even though he's one of the most quoted and well-known Chan ancestors, there were only like 5 people apparently in his assembly during those teaching years. It was this run-down place with a, the roof leaking and everything, and they couldn't really afford to fix it up or anything like that. But and very few people wanted to practice there. Partly because the roof was leaking and it was a hard life. So Zhao Zhou in his early years came to Nanchuan and said, "What is the way?" And Nanchuan, out of respect for his teacher's teaching and because what else could he say? Is ordinary mind is the way. Ordinary mind is the way. Another translation here is normal mind is the way. And the Chinese character has something like eternal or permanent, which colloquially means like ordinary or normal. But it has this sense too of like the kind of continuous everyday mind would have this kind of continuous permanent sort of sense. And then Zhao Zhou asks, can it be approached deliberately? Or like sounds good. Ordinary mind is the way. Like how can I aim towards it? How can I approach it? And Nanchuan said, if you try to aim for it, you thereby turn away from it. Which is kind of clarifying what ordinary mind is and what this contrivance would be like trying to get the ordinary mind. And also, it points to adding something extra to it, with just a very subtle something extra, just trying to aim towards it. Trying to even be it, but this trying. And then it also points to the fact that this is not it. You know, trying, aiming for it, trying to it is, it means like we're, if we're aiming somewhere, it's not, we can't aim here. Here has no aim, right? Here is just here. This mind, this present mind cannot be aimed towards. That doesn't make any sense, right? So it can't be aimed towards, it can't be approached, it can't be tried for, because it's right here. And yet, so elusive, right? Because already, isn't this off to even be asking? What is the way? Isn't that already, you know, missing ordinary mind? And yet, where else could ordinary mind be? So Nanchuan says, if you aim for it, you thereby turn away from it. And Zhaozhou says, if one does not try, then how can one know it's the way? Or if one does not aim towards it, how can one know it's it? If one does not direct oneself towards it, how can one know it? And I think these are like excellent questions, you know, to ask about ordinary mind. You say, oh, you know, just this, no effort, no doing anything. Well, okay, here we are. But like, how can I know this is it? Wouldn't this be a natural question for one really putting this into practice, sincerely receiving these instructions? And Nanchuan says, so it's a question about knowing. How can you know it? Nanchuan says, the way is not in the province of knowledge, yet not in the province of not knowing. Knowledge or knowing is false consciousness or you know, dualistic conceptuality. But not knowing is indifference or blankness. So two extremes. If you really arrive at this, at the way, this perfect, all-pervading way, it's like vast space, empty and open. How can you insist on affirmation and denial? At these words, Zhaozhou was awakened. The way, that, which, in other words, ordinary mind. What is the way? Ordinary mind. So ordinary mind, or the way, is not in the province of knowledge or knowing, and not in the province of not knowing. So we can't know, if we know it, we contrive it, we make it into something. And if we don't know it, that's just, or you know, to avoid the issue then by like, okay, I don't know it. Or just, duh. Kind of not knowing is blank, indifference or blankness. It's or, you know, it, not caring, a kind of apathetic not knowing. If you really arrive at the way, ordinary mind, it's like vast space, empty and open. How can you insist on affirmation and denial? Affirmation and denial is kind of like knowing and not knowing. And then Mumon, so this is Mumon Khan, this collection of 48 koans, of which this is the 19th. So Mumon, or Wu Men in Chinese, says, questioned by Zhaozhou, Nanchuan simply crumbled and melted. So when questioned, what is the way? Nanchuan simply crumbled and melted. And you could hear this as, didn't know how to answer, so he just shriveled up. But I don't think this is what it's saying. I think it's like his way of answering was crumbling and melting, like dropping off body and mind. he was unable to provide an explanation. But this is like praise. And other translations of this make that quite clear. But if just reading this, it almost sounds like he hesitated and faltered and couldn't explain. But Wu Men seems to be actually praising Nan Chuan, the great teacher Nan Chuan, saying he crumbled and melted and was unable to provide an explanation. That's ordinary mind. Crumbling, melting, unable to explain. Because explanation is a little bit contrived. So please excuse me. Is getting into explanation. As for Diaozhou, even granting that he was enlightened, he still had to study for 30 years. So that's just a nice little addendum to say that even though this was his great transformation, it's not the end. Then he just had to manifest ordinary mind for the rest of his life and keep clarifying, even after practicing with his teacher, clarifying more and more deeply for another 40 years. Still, then he went out and continued endlessly. Maybe not endlessly, but till he was 120. And then, so Mumon, the collector of these koans, wrote the, gave that kind of comment, and then he'd write a verse. And this is one of my favorite verses in the Mumon Khan. It says, this is kind of a poetic response to this story by Mumon. In spring, there are 100 flowers starting yesterday, the first day of spring. In spring, 100 flowers. In autumn, the moon. In summer, cool breezes. And in winter, there's snow. If no idle matters hang on your mind, then it's a good season in the human world. The inconceivable changes of nature just manifesting in such an ordinary, uncontrived way. Isn't it the perfect demonstration of the uncontrived, all-pervading way, is the flowers just blooming in spring, and the autumn moon, and the cool summer breeze on a hot day, and the winter snow so silent and still. If no idle matters hang on the mind, then it's a good season in the human world. And I once made this, in my deadhead days, I made this t-shirt to support my travels. And it was this poem. Before I really got into Zen, I somehow came across this poem from the Mumon Khan about ordinary mind, and thought it was such a beautiful imagery, and made this shirt and had printed, and then would hand paint in and sell the shirts or trade them for tickets to concerts, and people, I thought it was a good reminder for the deadheads, who I think often did appreciate ordinary mind, but sometimes would have idle concerns. and then just the other day, this week, I was so happy to find at the checkout line in Trader Joe's this verse from the Mumon Khan on a card.
What was it?
I think it's still probably there, Trader Joe's downtown. And it doesn't say it's Mumon, but here it is. Zen is everywhere. Ordinary mind is there at Trader Joe's.
No, that doesn't surprise me.
No, it's a card. You can get these cards.
Okay.
But it's a Trader Joe's brand card.
Greeting card.
Okay. Greeting card, yeah. And the picture is almost identical to this one that I did on this t-shirt. And so I wondered if maybe somebody found this t-shirt from 25 years ago or something. It's the Four Seasons picture. I mean, the verse goes nicely with the picture, but it has the sun, the summer sun. I think maybe mine had actually, because it says cool breezes, it had like clouds with breeze coming out of them, and flowers in the spring, and snowflakes in the winter, and leaves falling in the fall, with the moon. Oh yeah, I think mine had a moon in it, but leaves falling. And the middle was like a yin and yang. So this has an earth.
It's also in the NBA.
Really? How so?
In Phil Jackson was coaching the Chicago Bulls, mm-hmm. Michael Jordan and Rodman and Pippen, Steve Kerr. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book about his experience of coaching these hard to put together as a team, individuals and strong minds. He put something poetic in front of each chapter.
Oh, really? That verse.
10,000 flowers in the spring.
Great. So, yeah. I mean, it just says it all. And this translation is a little different. And, you know, it's a little disappointing that they didn't say Zen Master Mumon, you know, it's just left unquoted. But kind of nice also that they didn't, you know. Just let it be ordinary poem of Trader Joe's. 10,000 flowers in spring, radiant brilliance in crisp autumn air. Warm caresses from the summer sun, winter's deep stillness on moonlit snow. If your mind is not clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. A commentary on ordinary mind. The mind not clouded by unnecessary things. Sounds so simple. And yet this is like the whole practice, right? It's just revealing and disclosing our unnecessary thing, mind, our contrived grasping and rejecting mind, and then by acknowledging it, we melt away the root of transgressions. We see it for what it is and can let it go and return to ordinary mind. And this is the pure and simple color of true practice. Before we open it up completely, let me just bring up a little bit more, because I want to get to Lin Ji tomorrow, so we have to get Huangbo in here today. Huangbo, the disciple of Baijiang, who is a Dharma brother of Nanchuan, and because also I think it's the same thing. They're passing on this teaching, but putting it in new words along the way. So, Huangbo, Obaku in Japanese, says, "All Buddhas and all sentient beings are nothing but one mind, besides which nothing exists." And, you know, he doesn't make this connection, but I think we could say that this one mind is ordinary mind, the one mind that is all Buddhas and all sentient beings. And how wonderful that it's not just all Buddhas are this one ordinary mind. All Buddhas and all sentient beings are nothing but one mind, besides which nothing exists. There really isn't this grasping and rejecting. There really aren't unnecessary things in ordinary mind. It's just that they seem to appear and obscure it. this mind, ordinary mind, which is without beginning, is unborn and indestructible. It doesn't come and go. It's not green nor yellow. I don't know why we would think the mind is green or yellow. It has no form or color. It has neither form nor appearance. It does not belong to the categories of things which exist or do not exist. And we could add in, as Jiaozhou said, it's not in the realm of knowing or not knowing. Nor can it be thought of in terms of new or old. It's neither long nor short, big nor small, for it transcends all limits, measures, names, traces, and comparisons. So it's starting to seem really, this is like completely inconceivable now. If we had any idea of ordinary mind, it maybe just got obliterated. But it's that which you see before you. This is like, you know, it has no characteristics at all, and yet it's that which you see before you. Begin to reason about it, and you at once fall into error. Or beginning to try to grasp it, or know it, or not know it, you fall into error. It's like the boundless void which cannot be fathomed or measured. The one mind alone is the Buddha, and there's no distinction between the Buddha and sentient beings. But, you know, there really isn't, right? But we could say that sentient beings are grasping forms and so seek externally for Buddhahood. By their very seeking, they lose it, for that is using Buddha to seek for Buddha and using mind to grasp mind. Even though they do their utmost for a full eon, they will not be able to attain it. This is such strong Dharma, I feel. We have to just really trust that it's right here. And if we seek out the slightest bit outside, elsewhere, we'll just go on that way for an eon. They do not know, these sentient beings do not know, that if they put a stop to conceptual thought, and we could say, let go of any extra contrivance, any trying to get it, trying to make it into anything. But here it says, if they put a stop to conceptual thought and forget their anxiety, the Buddha will appear before them. For this mind is Buddha, and the Buddha is all living beings. It's not the less for being manifested in ordinary beings, nor is it greater for being manifested in the Buddhas. It's not improved by being a Buddha, or diminished by being just this sentient being, mind running around late. One ordinary mind. You'd like to bring up any points about this? Questions, comments, or clarifications about how to practice in such a situation?
The last verse you read from Mangpo sounds almost identical in the verses on the faith mind. Which Sengstan says, seek mind with a discriminating mind is the greatest of all mistakes.
Same, yeah. Mm. Yeah. To seek mind with mind. To seek the one ordinary mind with the discriminating, grasping, rejecting, contrived mind. And yet it's so almost painful to not do that. Much more painful to do it. But our tendency, especially I think as Zen students, we just want to get a little bit of a, maybe not even quite a hold of it, but just, we want to just touch it. But even this is a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they do say that. I think, was it maybe Nishiari Bokusan, who was one of Suzuki Roshi's teacher, said something like, talking about the Genjo Koan, in lectures on the Genjo Koan, said something like, to really understand the Genjo Koan, you must have a mind like an infant. And, you know, infant is, that's really all, you can't even really function so well in the adult world as an infant. But then I also think of, you know, Jesus saying, lest ye become as little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. So it's something like very innocent, uncontrived, just, another way to put it is, children are just being themselves. They're not trying to do anything. I mean, sometimes they get into their fantasy world and try to play out some other character. But even then, they're not really trying to be they're playing, and they're wholeheartedly playing. But, we adults are much more complicated. We feel like we have to be this or that and so on. And so, which is so normal, and yet it's creating this discontent of just being ourselves. To the point where it's like we've lost that child mind to such a large extent, it seems, that then to even ask, then how do I direct myself back towards it, is like an adult question of, you know, Jiaojiao, a teenage question anyway. And instead of just like a child wouldn't even ask, well, how do I just be myself? And it's like not even so much an issue. So, but I think it's beautiful that they all seem to be making the point that we have this mind. It's not like we have to become a child again, or we've lost it permanently, and we have to wait till we're born as a child again or something. No, not at all. It's more that fresh, present, open awareness mind is always available, and it's being demonstrated by the sun and moon and breezes and flowers and all of that. And Sashin, of course, is just a wonderful opportunity to rediscover such a mind. The simplicity, mind of simplicity.
And I felt closer to that when it's not knowing or not knowing.
Yeah.
But when you added no idle concerns or I want to think, well, okay, can you list what are the idle concerns? Which ones are idle and which ones aren't?
I didn't bring with me, but Robert Aitken Roshi has his commentary on this koan, and at that line, at the very end of this verse, his comment is something like, he says something like that, what are these idle concerns that the verse is talking about? And he says, people usually say, it's just, you know, quote, something like, well, just any discriminations, judgments, any kind of grasping or rejecting, something like that. And I thought, yeah, that's what I would have thought. And he said, that's not wrong, but that's a bit general, is how he said it. Which is maybe what you're saying. It's like, well, what are they exactly? Yeah, that's a bit general. And then, as a koan teacher that he is, he didn't say, you know, specifically. Because he's trying to turn it back to us. And like, what are idle concerns? That's our, that maybe that's the koan now. And but one point that when I read that, what arose was, well, it's particularly the idle concerns of Jiaojiu in this case were the particular concerns, if we're getting really particular, and, you know, talking about the story in particular, it's about the concerns about the ordinary mind, which are like particularly like Zen concerns. You know, when we're not in the sesshin or something, we're not like saying, oh, what, how do I know it? How do I not know it? What's the ordinary mind again? Then we have other concerns. And those also hang in our mind and obscure the spring flowers, of course, too. But in sesshin, maybe a lot of those, a lot of the other daily life concerns, maybe, sometimes, are somewhat diminished in the simplicity of such a life as this. So, but then all our concern energy gets kind of focused around, okay, but now, like, what's the practice? What's the way? What's this ordinary mind? And that was Gaudo's concern. Well, how do I know it? How do I not know it? So, if we have other concerns too about, like, oh, I forgot to, you know, make this appointment with this person next week, and like, oh, I'm going to think about that the rest of the period now, then first maybe we let go of that one and just then return to the present. We'll deal with that later. But then in the present, I think, and I don't know if other people have this problem of what is the way? Right? This is our Zen problem. And how do I know it or direct my mind towards it? And those are like the final idle concerns that actually obscure our, like, you know, stepping out into the garden in the apple blossoms and feeling the sun and just not having to ask what is it?
I want to confess a little pessimism in this whole idea. You know, that statement about Jiaojiu was awakened. here was this, you know, creative, smart guy. I think he was just really turned on. I think he said, you know, yeah, this is what I want to do and what I want to sort of place on the front burner of my life now. This is kind of, this hits me, you know, where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to keep living here. And in that sense, you know, I think it's ordinary.
Yeah.
I think you know, as you talked about yesterday, you know, what is your deepest concern? What is your deepest question?
Your intention.
Your deepest intention. I think, you know, when we start thinking that way, and then, you know, we come to the Zen Center and we hear things that kind of move us, you know, even more. And, you know, to our deepest self, I think we just get turned on, and you know, Jiaojiu was a brilliant guy, and you know what he said gets put down on paper.
So the problem is with this awakening or enlightenment stuff.
Yeah.
That it's something that you might feel like, let's not make it into anything more than just being like turned on to the present life.
I just want to surf this mystery forever.
What makes you think it is something more than that?
Well,
it's just a loaded word.
Yeah, I think awakening is sort of loaded. As if before we were sweeping the pebbles, you know, nothing. And then when we heard hit the bamboo, you know, think it's like that fellow in the sutta that we've been chanting, you know, who listened to Buddha's early lectures and, you know,
the eye of Dharma opened.
The Dharma wheel started turning. You know, what's his name? Starts with a K.
Ajnata Kondinya.
Yeah.
Or Kondana, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a way to put it. And I've even, you know, I think it's an interesting question, because a lot of these koan questions, they end with, you know, he was enlightened, or they, you know, had insight or something. And I heard some, maybe it was some Zen scholar or something saying something about, we don't know really what that, you know, now we attribute this huge thing to it, like the heavens broke open and light poured down. But actually, it could be that in those times, they just had an insight, meaning they're like, oh, they just saw something in a new way. And then over time, like, it got more and more exalted. And the koans are point us in these new ways. And maybe for some people, that, oh, is really big. And so then we, to promote the Zen school and so on, it gets bigger and bigger until it becomes like, that wasn't just some ordinary insight, that was like the heavens breaking open. But even the word Satori in the Chinese character means something like just to perceive or know or understand, actually. It's not like, doesn't mean heavens breaking open as a, you know, as a word. Like, they use it in normal language, like, to satori something is to, like, you know, understand something or perceive something. So, you know, we don't know the origin of these and the different degrees of, you know, being turned on. There's little turn-ons and there's big ones. And I think we could say maybe enlightenment is like that, or it's more like, and as the Buddha's great enlightenment, if we even say, well, that was just, he just understood the Four Noble Truths, really understood them. It wasn't that big a deal, and then it got made into like a really big deal. But still, we'd say, what are the criteria, and what are the results of this understanding and insight? And in that case, it's very clear that it's all about, you know, discontent and the end of discontent. So if we like see something in a new way that actually relieves us of some burden of suffering, relieves us of, I'm really striving to get this thing in my zazen and just like, oh, just be, and like, then we're just here for a moment and relaxed and painful body, whatever is happening, we're just like, I don't mind, it's all okay for a moment. I can't even see. If I went digging, I could find some discontent probably, but in this moment, it's like, it's not a problem. That's pretty good, I think. Isn't that worth, worth the struggle doing such a strange thing as like sitting all day. Yeah.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I think that I find so encouraging, and it's in this koan, is I think it's one of the comments, even, it's not in the original story, is, well, he still had to practice for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where my mind, I get encouraged by that. You know, that it's not like enlightenment the way that I think maybe even our Western minds try to make it like an object of that somehow then, you know, and then you never have to do anything.
Yeah, you're done.
And then they live happily ever after.
Exactly.
That's where it is. It's rooted in
all
the relationship movies. I end right when they get together.
Right.
And they don't talk about the 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, there's where the awakening, that's where the enlightenment shows up. Mm. Otherwise, it is just a moment.
Interestingly, that's Robert Aitken again. He used that metaphor, talking about this, the marriage metaphor. He said, this was like the honeymoon for Zhao Zhou.
Yeah.
That he understood. But then there was the 30 years of marriage.
Yeah. And I know just in my own life that, I write things down, for better or for worse. And sometimes the things that, like, say now, there's a couple things I'm working with that I probably wrote about 15 years ago. At the time when I wrote it, I thought it was just bullshit. It was nothing. It was just, it was almost like it wasn't even a moment of enlightenment. But in the years that have unfolded, this thing was actually, it was a very, very helpful insight.
It had an effect on your life.
But it only showed up. In that moment, I would have rejected, oh, this isn't enlightenment. Mm. This is a waste of time. But, now I go, oh, actually, no, that was the beginning of a very helpful and profound path.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
So kind of like to not inflate it too much, but also not to reject it when it happens, because you really don't know
where
it's going to go.
And that's the way to deal with everything, is not inflating or rejecting.
Yeah.
That's what ordinary minds is the mind of not doing that. Yes, exactly. And yet, it's a tricky and loaded issue, this enlightenment topic. And in our particular Soto school, right, these turning moments are not as emphasized as this is it, every moment is emphasized. And the, these images, like it's, the Soto Zen image for enlightenment, actually, is like, walking in the mist and getting more and more soaked, but not really, it's not like a particular raindrop that's getting you wet. It's like, you don't even notice it happening, and then you go back inside, and wow, I'm like totally soaked. And there's maybe problems with this kind of view too. And yet, the advantage of it seems to be that it's doesn't get so obsessed with particular times and places and clouds parting kind of thing. And these are the Linji ancestors. This stream that seems to be arising, the Sashin Matsu by Zhang Huangbo Linji, and which later in modern Japan is now emphasized as like they use the term Kensho, which is Dogen actually does use Satori. He's got a Shogo Genzo essay called Great Satori, actually. Go is the Chinese reading, Dai Go, the same character. And so he doesn't use it so much, but the word Kensho, he almost never uses, I think. And I think it's intentional that's the main Rinzai term. Would mean Kensho means seeing nature. And it's about this, like, moment of seeing. Although we could also interpret that in a more broad sense. It's just like, Zhao Zhou just like saw the nature of how a thing of ordinary mind in a more general sense. But see, the problem with saying seeing, emphasizing this Ken show, the seeing, is that then it's like, it's very much like Zhao Zhou's question, well, how can I know it? It's kind of like, how can I see it? Instead of, how can I just be it and not have to know it? How can we just be soaked without having to like see a particular moment when in the mist we're wet? This is, in a way a big topic too, and I think it's both sides you know, either any extreme view about anything actually is a problem, right? So Soto Zen gets criticized for being saying that, well, there's no enlightenment left. It gets interpreted so loosely that it's just like, well, everything's it, and you know, there's no particular marking points or anything. So it's just an ordinary mind is my, you know, deluded, grasping, and rejecting mind is it. So here we are, a bunch of deluded beings, and as I say this, I think, you know, there's the deepest layer of truth to like all that, just like that as it is, how wonderfully perfect. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, this is non-duality of delusion and enlightenment. And then Rinzai Zen gets criticized for saying, oh, you're just like obsessed with these particular moments, and it's so dualistic, actually. You're saying, this is it, and this is not it, and like, you know, you're trying to get this and attain that, and you're not satisfied with your life as it is, because you haven't seen it. So that's the problem there. So it's not so without what is Nan Chuan says, the way is not in the province of knowing, nor in the province of not knowing. Knowing, even, or you know, knowing that this is the way, is just false consciousness. It's actually limiting. It's actually an obscuration. But not knowing is just, if it's not knowing, it's indifference. Yeah, it's all it, or something like that. Then that's just indifference. But the way is like vast space without affirmation or denial. What are you about to say?
Well, I don't know. You cut it off when you you know, whenever you name the one side, of course, you can always see the other. And so having said what I said and hearing your commentary about the mist, on the other hand, I think there are moments where, and to me, it's not so much about seeing, it's feeling, where you feel it. And I'm thinking of all things, what kind of popped into my head was the Shuso ceremonies that we have here, where, you know, different students take turns, you know, being in that seat and having the questions, you know, as many of you have been to the ceremonies, and you feel it. You know, the energy in the room, people comment on that, where, and not only the energy of seeing one of your Dharma brothers or sisters emerge just in this present experience that you're co-creating, you know, but you feel it like from that seat when you're going back and forth with somebody and you're getting that, either they're kind of feeling like, no, you don't quite have it yet, or you're feeling like, you can see over there, we're not one yet. Mm. And then when it happens, you both feel it, and then you can move on, you know? And what is that? I mean, it is not something that you could codify. It's not color by numbers. Mm. Of course, every shoe said, tell me what to do, how to do it. And the prior people said, just trust yourself.
And maybe
trust
feeling.
Trust the Dharma.
It could be that feeling is not even quite the word either.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's some kind of sense, I don't know, it's an actualization is, you know, to me, one of the better words we have.
Actualization.
It happens. That's not nothing. It's not just nothing. This undifferentiated, it is something.
Think I'll turn the TV back on.
Yeah, Harry.
I've been going back and forth with this for a long time because I was under the sway of a sort of a rogue Soto teacher who went into the, what do you call it, the Dhamma, and he gave up sitting and was saying, just let go of it all and you're there and you don't have to do any work, nothing, it's all there. And, fortunately, I could get back to Soto because I was smart enough to realize that when he said to stop sitting, there was something wrong. but then my next teacher was a Rinzai priest who, when he moved to this area, had gone, you know, had gone through Sodo, but there was still that remnant. And so I just was always hung up on this big awakening. And in working with me on this, Taigen refers to you know, not enlightenment, but an opening insight. You know, in an opening experience, it's a, you know, he says, you know, yeah, we'll have opening experiences and you can work with them, but they're going to come and go, and if you get hung up on them,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not the main point. The main point is, like, every moment of our life.
But then he turns around and says, I had a major opening when I was such an age, and I dropped what I was doing in California. And but don't get hung up on it.
Opening is a nice word. I like that because it's like opening to what already is. It's like everything, it's not like, and it's not kind of, it doesn't have, seeing can have that more dualistic sense of like, I am seeing it as an object, but opening is like, as part of it, as part of the whole, opening to the whole and opening as the whole, and it's a heart and a body and mind that could be constricted and closed is just now open. It's a wonderful word, yeah, that has all those permutations. So here's the last verse, verse comment on this ordinary mind is the way story by maybe a slightly later Chinese Zen master Fo Jian. If you want to know the ordinary way, trust nature spontaneously. There's another image. Instead of knowing, seeing, aiming, trust nature spontaneously. There's faith in mind. So I trust in mind. The trusting mind. If you want to know the ordinary way, trust nature spontaneously. When you row a boat, you need to raise the oars. When you ride a horse, you apply the crop. Is that like the reins?
The whip.
Oh. Let's say the reins. if you get hungry, obtain some food. And you should sleep when tired. All is attained through conditions. Yet what is attained is not a condition. I think this touches on some of this last bit of the discussion here, actually. You know, tying it back to the story. If you want to know the ordinary way, trust nature spontaneously. Or the conditioned, the arising world. Of everything happening completely as it is, normal happening. Nature. The flowers coming in the spring at the time that they are, at the time that they bloom. They bloom spontaneously or presently. And about our I think this is nice images too, because it's like we're a way we're interacting with all of this. Trust nature spontaneously isn't this passive thing like just watch the flowers open. It's like in our actual doing activities. So, and in Sashin is so great because we have these sides where we just sit and just let the day bloom, and then we're about to do this Orioki meal, right? So like all this stuff, how do we do that again? When does that happen? And like doing stuff. If you want to know the ordinary way, trust nature spontaneously. When you row a boat, you need to raise the oars and row. When you ride a horse, you need to use the reins to steer.
Then like that crop.
Maybe sometimes the crop is needed. if you get hungry, just have some food, and if you need to, if you're tired, just sleep. It sounds like ordinary mind. All is attained through conditions, yet what is attained is not a condition. I can say, ordinary mind is just going along with conditions, but ordinary mind itself is not a condition. As Huangbo says about the one mind that's not green or yellow, or arising or ceasing, or even dependent on anything at all. Unconditioned, unborn mind. So please excuse me for this vast defilement of ordinary mind. Now I can get back to rowing with trust. We dedicate the merit of this gathering to the one mind, ordinary and uncontrived. Beings are numberless, I bow to say
Buddha's way is unsurpassable.